Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
This episode of EU Startups Podcast is brought to you by Vanta. Are you building a business? Achieving compliance with frameworks like ISO 27001 and SOC 2 can help you win bigger deals, enter new markets, and deepen trust with customers. But this can also cost you real time and money. Vanta automates up to 90% of the work for the most in-demand frameworks, helping businesses get compliant quickly. And with over 300 integrations, you can easily monitor and secure the tools your businesses rely on. Join over 7,000 fast-growing companies that use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. To learn more about how Vanta works and to get 20% off, visit vanta.com/EU Startups. That's vanta.com/EU Startups. Now, kick back and enjoy the show. Hey, everyone. This is Marcin Lewandowski, and you're watching, listening, actually, to the EU Startups Podcast. My guest today is Tim Schumacher. He's an impact investor and entrepreneur. He has founded and invested in multiple startups, including Seto.com and Ecosia. Ecosia is now the largest independent European search engine. It uses all its profits to plant trees, and it has planted over 100 million trees up till now. He recently co-founded the Ecosia World Fund with a focus on climate investments. Please give it up to the one and only Tim Schumacher. Welcome on the show, Tim.
Hello. Hey, nice to have be here.
Awesome. Tim, taking it back to the start, what inspired you to become an entrepreneur? You know, were there any specific moments that ignited this journey? Or did you just wake up one day and think, well, I could use a bit of more chaos in my life?
Well, I guess, no, it was more of a journey, like I guess for most people. I was always super entrepreneurial, even as a kid, you know, when I was, I don't know, 4 years old, selling stuff having a little business or something, then, of course, with my family. And then later, as a teenager, it was something I always enjoyed. And then I also got my first computer, started coding, and when I was about 16, started programming things, selling them online. So it was always, I would say, pretty much in my DNA. One thing led to the next one. After university, I basically dived right in. I was like, no, I'm not going to work anywhere. I'm just going to start something on my own. And that was CEO back then. And then kind of one thing led to the next one. And so I never really kind of worked for anyone, so to say.
Got it. So in your case, it's like more natured than nurtured.
Yeah, you could say so. But of course, people outside kind of influenced me. I remember, for example, I did a high school exchange when I was 15 to Seattle, and I was deeply impressed by Microsoft and this entrepreneurial spirit there. So I think it's always the fortune also of having worked with people or having been in an environment that fostered that. And so it's both. It's nature, but nurture.
Both. Awesome. 100%. So, you know, being an entrepreneur, and you probably know it better than anyone else, can be tough. Was the hardest part of being a founder to you or maybe a challenge that you faced? And how do you maintain happiness and enthusiasm along the way?
Yes, I think the hardest thing is always is going through the ups and downs and really finding a strong team that can work with you. Because I really think it's actually much easier to go through those ups and downs in a team. And I've been fortunate to work alongside very, very talented people. I prefer to start things together. And even if I have multiple projects these days, each of them are done in a team, and I'm never like the only contributor, but I always rely on people. But that's also the hardest thing. If I look at startup failures, investments I've done into teams, then very often they fail because the founders at the end of the day don't get along. They don't have complementary skills. They might even get to a fight, even if they don't get to a fight, they have different opinions about life. And one wants to have a comfortable, steady paycheck, and the other one wants to swing big for the fences and grow something huge and take sacrifices, and those things are really hard to align. So I think that's really hard. And for me, it's at the end of the day, it's all about picking the right people to work with, that's what makes me happy, and I think that's what makes most founders happy.
Awesome. So secret to, you know, successful entrepreneurship is the same as secret to successful life. Just pick the right people, surround yourself with right people.
Absolutely.
And everything's going to be all right.
That's right.
So you've built or helped build the largest independent European search engine that uses all its profits to plant trees. Which is very inspiring story to me. It has planted over 100 million trees so far. What are the highlights of Ecosia's remarkable story for you? And what impact did it, did this journey have on you personally?
Yeah, so I didn't come up with the idea of Ecosia. That was Christian Kohl, the founder and CEO of the company. But I came on board very early on. So when the company was about three people, and we were joint co-owners of the company since then, in 2013, so 10 years now. At some point, we merged the company, or we put the company into a nonprofit. But that's a different story. But we run it like any tech company. And for me, what struck me in the very beginning was that Ecosia is kind of the perfect blend between one thing that makes a lot of money on the internet, namely search. It's, I would say, the most profitable venture because everything starts with a search. Mm-hmm. And that combining that with what we need most, namely something to fight climate change and the climate catastrophe at scale, and trees are one thing in the arsenal to fight climate change. Trees are obviously not enough. We need a lot of things, and I guess we'll get to World Fund, and so the venture fund we've started later, where we fund a lot of those things. But trees and regenerative agriculture, reforestation, it's a big component of that, and so I thought, hey, why not combine the two? I've helped for the last 10 years to grow Ecosia into where it is today. Always more in the background, always more as a sparings partner to the founder and the founding team, but nevertheless, a very, very exciting journey.
Awesome. So you already mentioned the World Fund. So Ecosia World Fund is your recent venture. Maybe you can tell us more about, you know, its mission and how does it resonate with your broader vision for impact investments?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, Ecosia was our first LP, and we have very strong ties. We ended up naming the fund World Fund. The idea of World Fund is to invest as a venture capital company into companies that really move the needle on decarbonization. So we're looking for any startup that has massive potential to decarbonize our economy. That can be things in food, agriculture, and land use. So this is the original Ecosia part. That can be things like in forestation, in regenerative agriculture, but also we do a lot of alternative proteins. So getting rid of our unhealthy dependence on animal protein, because that then leads to deforestation. So we do a lot of things in the food area. But then also, of course, energy, anything comes to renewable energy, storage, the decentralized energy resources and the grid behind it. And then all the way to transportation, manufacturing, buildings, all of that at the end is combined. That's all energy at the end of the day. And the question, right, how do we move energy from fossil fuels to natural resources, renewable resources, and that's what we finance. We're classic VC. We finance not the super early stage, more like late seed, Series A, Series B, which is where we see the biggest funding gap also in Europe. $1 to 10 million euros initial tickets. European companies with global applicability, so technologies that can also be exported really well, and where we can build European champions. And that's essentially what we do as World Fund.
Sounds great, Tim. So actually, you know, transitioning from entrepreneur to investor is like going from being the chef to the food critic. So what's it like swapping hats for you? And, you know, do you secretly miss the kitchen chaos?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. But I mean, fortunately, I am not a full-time investor. I'm still an entrepreneur. Right. I have especially one business which I operatively run, which is SaaS Group. Mm-hmm. And I also have chairman positions at companies I build up, like IO, the ad blocking company, where I'm a bit more involved. And so, yeah, it's both. I mean, it's a good comparison. As the food critic, you know, you get to eat in the best restaurants in the world and really compare and learn a lot. And startups is the same. So I really enjoy talking to the best and the brightest minds in climate tech. Like, we've got brilliant entrepreneurs now, like a lot of talent going to the space. People who say, hey, I really want to make a difference in the world. I don't want to, I don't know, code some stupid stuff which is no use to anyone except for maybe people's own pockets. We know that innovation is a wide range, and there is a lot of useless innovation, I would say. But to doing things that really matter and that really are important for humanity. So we're seeing a lot of great talent there, and I get to learn about all the technologies, about, as I said earlier, it's a huge range. I mean, carbon is part of everything in our economy, from the way we produce electricity to transportation, manufacturing. It's everywhere. So also we need to tackle everything. And I get to talk with all those entrepreneurs and look at what they're building, and that's a very privileged situation. But yeah, I sometimes, in doing those things, do miss the kitchen chaos, but that's where I have my own startups from. And it's also cool because I can talk in a different fashion to the entrepreneurs, because I'm not just a VC who's never kind of really worked in a company. I have first-hand experience of scaling companies myself and still doing it. So I like the mix, I have to say.
Awesome. So you kind of answered my next question with your previous answer, because I was about to ask you, you know, as an impact investor, what do you look for in founders? And you kind of mentioned that already. So maybe I can reverse the question, and I'll ask you, so what value do you want to bring to the table for founders?
Yeah, so I like to bring, I mean, first of all, maybe I think we should all be a little cautious of value the VCs bring to the table. At the end of the day, as the founder, you have to run the company, and you can ask for help, and then VCs can be tremendously helpful, for example, with introductions, where we have a huge network also among the partners. Also, I think we're really strong on the communication side, and with my co-founder at World Fund, with Daniel Visevic, being a communications pro, we have a great network, particularly within Germany, but also within Europe in general. So there's a lot of things where we provide value, but at the end of the day, as a founder, you need to do the work yourself. And so I would caution generally any founder to be a little bit wary if VCs say how much value they bring, because everybody brings value, but if anything, it's more of a bit of a signaling. And maybe that, on the signaling part, where we are really strong, and also kind of to your first part of the question of what we look for, is we have a strong signal as a climate VC, also with the Ecosia route, but with other things. People know that if World Fund comes on board, we really look into the climate potential of a startup. So how well can it really be helping to decarbonize? So we really look beyond greenwashing. There's also greenwashing in startups. We have our own methodology, how we measure the carbon potential of startups, and that in turn then also gives startups a really strong signal. If World Fund is on board, then it's a really kind of proven green technology it's a, yeah, it's basically like a, our own audit we do on this. And that's also what we look for. I mean, we look for great founders, of course, but we look for great founders that move the needle on decarbonization and to really have a profound impact on reducing CO2. And not just kind of some side thing. I think the two things are quite nicely aligned.
Got it. Awesome. So actually speaking about great people, great founders or investors, who was or maybe still is an inspiration to you when it comes to entrepreneurship, investing or life generally? And, you know, what would be a piece of advice or something that you've learned from that person that had a positive impact on you and that you would like to share with our audience?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to single out one person because along my career as an entrepreneur, I've learned things from dozens, hundreds of people who have influenced me positively in one other way. I, among kind of the big shots of tech, I've always been a fan of Bill Gates because I think he's managed to use his profits also for something more meaningful. I wish he would be doing more in climate tech, but also, I mean, he's one generation older, so maybe that's that's the reason. And I really admire founders who significantly do this and not just, I don't know, are billionaires and then they pledge like a million or two for climate tech, but really do kind of significantly use their fortunes for the greater good. And so, yeah, he'd be an example of someone I deeply respect both as a business person, as well as someone also who's been a bit more down to earth than some of the other ones, like literally speaking, with no moonshot projects, but really kind of a bit more humble and down to earth person than some of the other big shots in our industry.
Right. So looking ahead, can you paint a picture of the world you'd like to see in the future, maybe like in 10 years from now? Are there specific goals or changes you're hoping to see in the coming years?
Well, so my topic is decarbonization and climate change, so you'd be no surprise that my picture, my wish to a certain extent, but also my true hope is that we will, with all the entrepreneurial power, the talents we have, we will overcome our dependence on fossil fuels and all the problems we create with this to climate and the environment, and we'll move to a more regenerative world where we live within the planetary boundaries, and we also put a price on the pollution of the environment, meaning a CO2 price, but also on other things, and that the entrepreneurial power we have in Europe and elsewhere in the world will really help us overcome that huge challenge, just like humanity has overcome other huge challenges. And that's really what I, if I look back in 10 years, what I hope, you know, we'll see.
Awesome. Team, you know, given your work for the for the sustainability and climate change, how do you envision the lasting impact of your work on the world? I know that already you want to see all the change that you just mentioned, but are there any other things that you have in mind?
Yeah, well, I mean, I hope to do my part. It's like we need not one world fund, we need 100. We need like to 10x to 100x our investments into climate, stopping climate change. So I hope there's a lot more, and I'm doing my little part. The thing I'm very proud of is I think that we're financing European technologies that have the possibility also to become world leaders on certain technologies. I think is something that also Europe has missed. With the internet in particular, where we've given a lot of room to the US and Asia, and I think it's really important that we keep our own technologies, also for European sovereignty, and energy is a big thing. I mean, if we think about how many hundreds of billions Europe spends on energy imports, and most of them not to countries where we really want to send money to, Russia in particular, but also a few others, to me, also it plays into energy independence, it plays into the sovereignty of Europe, and it plays into so many good things that it's not just climate change, but all those things are very much aligned, and I hope to play my little part in that over the next couple of years.
Amazing. Team, we're getting to the end of this interview. I've been enjoying it a lot. Maybe to end it off on a bit more, or maybe even more personal note, what do you do to unwind? Like, you know, when you don't fight climate change with your startups or financing the startups that do, what's, you know, Team Schumacher all about?
Well, I'm probably a pretty easygoing guy. I like to be out in nature. I like to just spend time with friends and family, travel a bit, which is sometimes hard because I really, really try to reduce my flying to an absolute minimum. But, you know, if you fly somewhere consciously and then, you know, you spend a lot of time, I think it's fine. It's just we shouldn't just all be flying around all the time. Mm-hmm. And also do things like cooking and there again, maybe I'm too much mixing business and pleasure, but for example, I love to cook, but my kids, for example, I have the reputation of always sneaking leftovers and all sorts of materials I find into food, because food waste is actually a big problem. I mean, food waste is about, is about 10% of climate change is food waste. So food in general is about 30%. One third of that is food waste, course, across the entire value chain. And it ends with a consumer and we throw too much stuff away, but it's incredible like how much stuff you can actually sneak in other things. Yeah. From old bread you do stuff with to like leftovers from vegetables and stuff. And so that's maybe the one thing where I combine my profession with what I really also like to unwind with is doing something with my hands, cooking, those sorts of things.
Awesome. Thanks so much for this interview. It was a real pleasure. Good luck with everything, with finding the climate change, and I'll hope to talk to you soon.
Super. Thank you very much.